TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, are you ready today to double your pleasure, double your fun, and maybe double the danger with Mirrodorn gum?
Oh, Chris, I am so ready. Unfortunately, I feel a little left out because, you know, I don't have a twin. So really, I don't know. This episode, it left me feeling a little bit sad, you know, that I don't have that full completion of having the twin. So I don't know. Hopefully, you're in a slightly better place than I am, but I was just kind of devastated. So,
yeah, I don't have a twin either. So I am slightly devastated there, but I feel a little bit better because Rom brought me 5 glasses to drink from. It's a bit odd because there are only 4 of us around here, but I'm looking forward to the refreshment. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I mean, you know, Rom tends to drop a glass, so maybe he's just ahead of the curve, right? You know, I'm glad that he's maybe starting to think ahead a little bit.
I'm laughing. I'm thinking if that were his excuse, everyone knows Rom, he tends to drop a glass. Let's just always give him an extra.
Exactly.
All right, everyone. Today, we're going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Deep Space Nine with Vortex. It's the 12th episode of season 1. And here's a quick rundown. When Mirrodorn twins arrive on the station and offer to sell a Tamagotchi to Quark, things get weird, and soon, 2 become 1. An alien named Croden enters and wants the item for himself. A firefight ensues, but Glass Odo intervenes, only not in time. Odo's subsequent investigation into the matter leads him down an unexpected path, one that reveals tantalizing clues to his origins. So, Matthew, before we jump into the story you were mentioning just before we recorded on the other side of the orb, that you and your wife are near the end of season 3 of Enterprise, and we're talking about the Mirrodorn twins, and you know who plays Kel and Ro'Kel in this episode? Not played by twins, played by Randy Oglesby, who is Degra on Enterprise. Did you recognize him there?
Oh my gosh. It was the very first thing that I recognized watching this episode because, you know, Degra plays such a pivotal part in season 3 of Enterprise. And so I've been hearing that voice a lot, especially as you get towards the end of the season. And mm-hmm. So I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that, you know, he was in this episode. And so, you know, I absolutely love when they're able to do that. And it's so much fun to be able to have these recurring actors, you know, that they do such a great job that they want them back. And, you know, I think what was fascinating here to me about his performance was that I can understand immediately from watching this performance because, I mean, mm-hmm. he's not on screen that much. Mm-hmm. And yet there is a presence for this actor. And so I can see why they would see this guy and be like, oh, no, this is somebody that we could work with quite a bit. you know, that, that we would want to give, you know, maybe even more.
Which they do because he's, well, this is his second appearance in Star Trek, I believe. He was the scholar artist in Riva's Chorus in Loud as a Whisper on The Next Generation. So here he gets a little bit more to do in terms of role in the story. And after this, he goes on to play Solarian Prin in The Darkness and the Light here on DS9. He is Kier in Counterpoint on Voyager. And then, in addition to Degra, and before he got to Degra, he is Trenal on Risnable, or Unexpected, on Enterprise.
Yes,
And he's like in the top five, along with Jeffrey Combs and Von Armstrong and some of them, in terms of like the number of characters he's been brought back to play on Star Trek. So he's somebody that I think generally fans don't think of in that sense, but he's been around a lot.
Yeah. And again, I think he is, you know, to me, I feel like it's well earned, you know, that he absolutely deserves, you know, to be back in these roles, because I think he does a really good job. And so I'm glad that they did bring him back for this episode. And it's interesting too, Chris, because, you know, I've seen so many episodes, especially recently as we've been watching through, you know, Deep Space Nine and Enterprise and all of these things. And so many times there are those episodes that kind of slip through the cracks that you just kind of, you somewhat forget a little bit about the things that happen in them, all the details. And I was pleasantly surprised that this episode, I could not remember that this was one where we really dig into Odo and tease a lot of stuff about him and his people in this one episode. I love it. I think it's so cool to see how they build that in here. And I think they do a really good job of it by subtly hinting that Odo's people come from the Gamma Quadrant, that they're called the Changelings. And so just I just couldn't remember that that's where all this was.
Right.
So it was just so great to get into this episode and be like, oh, this is the episode where we kind of like blow open the idea of who Odo is and where his people are from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I had the same experience. And it's very interesting for you and me when that happens, because we have watched the series over and over so many times. And yet there are those moments that sort of get lost in the mix, especially early on. And I was thinking back to when you and I did the Dominion Breadcrumbs episodes of The Orb here a while back. And I think there we mainly focused on stories from season two that were leading up to the reveal of the Dominion at the end of season two.
Yes.
And I don't think we talked about this one at all. And it may be because it's more about setting up Odo and who he is than it is the Dominion itself, which may be why I didn't think about it at the time. But when you watch here, in addition to setting up that curiosity for Odo of who he is and who his people are, there are some very specific things that are mentioned in here that are used in the setup of the Dominion. In particular, the idea that there used to be changelings on Rakar, but they were persecuted and they left, because that's the whole thing driving the Dominion is that the changelings were persecuted by solids, and that's why they have this animosity towards solids and feel the need to purge them. We're kind of getting ahead in terms of the story here, but it does relate to what we're getting here, and I think makes this episode much more valuable in season one than you might remember it being, because when I think of Vortex, really the Myrodorn twins, that's the first thing that pops into mind. And even the whole thing with the girl and the family, it is not something that really comes to mind when I think about this episode, and certainly not all the revelations about shapeshifters.
Yeah, and I think the other cool part about this is that, you know, this ties directly into the very first episode where, of course, Odo is so curious about himself and where he comes from. And so for this episode to do such a great job of making, I think, Odo susceptible to falling for a con artist, basically, somebody who is very good at deception. That, I think, is just really interesting to me because it tells us, I think, so much about Odo and where he is and what it is that really gets to him. And I think the other great thing about this is that we have this episode that allows us to, I mean, you mentioned when we did the breadcrumbs thing, but I mean, this is this all of this is subtly hinting towards things that are going to become huge in the series. And of course, even at this point, they don't know that, right? Like, what's interesting here is as much as we get about Odo as a character and his people and all that, did you catch the fact that we have a mistake here in this episode that Odo gets knocked out by a rock?
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, and so those will be things that which, you know, those are not going to happen in the future. You know, that's not going to be something that a character like Odo, a changeling, is not going to be able to have that type of thing happen to them. But this is where we are. You know, we're in this place where we're still figuring it out with Odo.
Right. That's where, rather than that being a mistake, maybe an inconsistency is a better way to describe it, because it shows that the writers themselves are still figuring out who this character is and who the shapeshifters are, who the changelings are. And we often talk about dangling threads and then pulling those threads, and that's very much what they were doing here. In the process of developing Odo's character, they also put these things out there about who his people could be, and were able to develop those, you know, pull on those later to develop the Dominion. So it is really interesting in that way. And then you talk about Odo being sucked in by this con artist, and that does stand out when you're watching it, because even the moment when he asks Croden if he could take him to the planet, and Croden's like, I'd be happy to. And I think that Cliff DeYoung, who's playing Croden here, plays that moment quite well with his face, because it really tips you off as the viewer that he's playing Odo, and you don't really expect Odo to be played like that by someone, because normally he can see right through people, and he's very skeptical, he's very suspicious. And so I think it is an interesting bit of commentary on how personal matters can really blind someone to situations that they would otherwise be cautious about, or they could see coming, they could see through a person. But in this case, because Odo is very intrigued by finding out more about his people, he kind of lets his guard down and allows Croden to actually use him to ultimately go and rescue his daughter.
See, I like that you know, we're kind of talking about this, because, you know, one of the things I think that this does is this makes this character, who's quite alien, so real by having Odo be susceptible to this type of character. I think is something that makes us feel for him. And we really then relate to this character, because who wouldn't want to know where they came from? And so that's the thing I think that makes this so interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of Odo, this is a fantastic story for building his character, and I really see it as the centerpiece of the story. We do see growth and development in other characters as well. Some of them may be questionable. Like Armin Shimmerman, has said before that he was a bit uneasy with Quark's role in this story because it felt like Quark is allowed to get involved in actions that result in a murder and get away with that. And maybe that's not the best way to set up the character. And it certainly does seem that Quark set up the whole situation for Croden to come in and then try to steal the Fabergé egg. Space Fabergé egg is at least what it looks like to me. And that means that, yeah, I mean, Quark is complicit in the death of this Myrhadorn twin. And I don't know, how do you see Quark's role in this story?
You know, to me, I think that's a really, it's an interesting question because I, in some ways, like the fact that this is what happens with Quark in this episode. And the reason I like it is because here in the first season, I think we do want Quark as a character, at least what I think we want Quark as a character, to not be easily pinnable.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the fact that he is more difficult to pin down. The fact that he's doing these things that are kind of disreputable and trying to get away with it, and in some ways not even really caring. You know, I think
that's the thing that I think Armin was a bit concerned about, right?
Which I could totally understand why, mm-hmm. as the actor, you know, you don't, that's not what you really want from your character.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actually what it does is that it does a good job of allowing this character to actually have somewhere to grow. And so to me, that's the exciting thing about this is that, you know, Quark is not a character that we can just easily say, oh, they're going to be a good character one day. No, I kind of want, you know, him here to be this type of person where, yeah, I don't really know if I like him. And I think that's more interesting than if we went the other direction and played this in a way where, you know, maybe he's more contrite about this whole thing in a way that you could like more, but I think it just would be less interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it gives them somewhere to go with him as well. And we see that development, the influence of the Starfleet crew on Quark, on everyone on the station. You know, we see it in Kira as well, how she comes to see things a bit differently over time. But with Quark, especially, we see that influence as the series goes on. I mean, he doesn't become, of course, like a model citizen. He's not going to be a Starfleet officer or anything like that. But he really does come to care for people, the people around him in particular. And if that were your starting point, it would be much less rewarding as a viewer to see the character take that journey. And for me, Quark works fine in this episode. He's doing something that I would expect Quark to do. I think the interactions that he has with Odo, particularly at the beginning of the episode, are a hallmark of the first season. Right from the start, these two characters, these two actors really had chemistry because, of course, they had worked together prior to Deep Space Nine, but they really shine through and they give us that alien commentary. And I think it works really well here at the beginning of this episode. And it's another great situation of Odo trying to pin down Quark, which is something that had been going on in the backstory of the station prior to when we arrive as viewers and Starfleet arrives. And here, you know, he still hasn't pinned down Quark. And also Rom in this episode, finally, and we mentioned this in the previous one as well, but here for sure, Rom is Rom, right? The way that he speaks, the way that he acts, he has really become the Rom that we come to know throughout the series rather than just the pit boss of the earlier part of season one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that I feel like, especially for, you know, we just had the Negus and now we have this. And it feels like these episodes, they are really coming into their own in terms of what the Ferengi characters are going to be. You know, Armin Shimmerman had been a Ferengi originally, and yet everything about that we thought we knew about Ferengi is going to change through Deep Space Nine. And so I think I really appreciate us being able to have this in this season, and already we're almost there, right? Like the Ferengi themselves, they feel very close to what they're going to be for the rest of the series. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like you mentioned, the fact that Rom feels more like himself. And so, yeah, I think they do a really great job of that here. And it's interesting, too, because this is an episode as well, which is truly focused on Odo and Quark to some extent. But really, this is just an Odo story, like almost. There, like everybody else in this really gets almost nothing to do, which is really interesting to me that even already at this point in the season, we're going to make this, it's a big ensemble cast, but this is an episode to which I think almost exclusively just lets us know that they're not going to feel bad about having a episode where there's mainly only one character being promoted and their story moving forward. Like nobody's story here really moves forward other than Quark and Odo, but mainly Odo.
Yeah.
And I think that's a risky move to make here in the first season, I think.
Yeah. I actually feel surprised when Jadzia and Kira show up on the screen. I'm like, oh, they're here.
Right.
And then they have something to say, and then Kira turns around and like, no, they'll thank us for bringing him there. And then it almost felt like we need to get the other characters involved, because honestly, this story, you really don't need the other characters involved. I feel like, I mean, I guess you need Bashir because someone's been killed, but the whole part about Bashir's comments about the pendant, for example, don't really need to be there for the story to work. It's not like Bashir is an expert on changeling artifacts and is the person that needs to deliver that, right? And I think that as the series goes on, they become more comfortable with stories like this where they really don't need to get everybody involved. They can really just focus on individuals. And eventually we get stories where the regulars don't even show up, right? They're stories driven purely by supporting cast. But yeah, at this point, it is very much just an Odo story. Now, one extra who's always around, but gets a name for the first time in this episode is Morn. Finally, this is the first time that we know that Morn is there. And that's wonderful to see him there, because he's such a mainstay of Deep Space Nine, and then shows up in Lower Decks all the time. We've got the Lurians all over the place at that point, but this is Morn's big moment of getting his name in this episode, Vortex.
Well, I think you mentioned this, and rightly so, that, you know, not only does Morn get his name, but I think Deep Space Nine in doing so shows us how this is going to be a show where even characters like this actually get a name, and they're going to be important in a way that I think, you know, these characters might not have been in other shows before. I think that's incredibly interesting. You know, we talked a lot about in this first season of the way in which Deep Space Nine is differentiating itself specifically from what we got in TNG. And this, I think, lets us know just how different this is going to be by giving us this character who, you know, normally and on the Enterprise would probably sit in the bar there at 10 Forward for episodes on end and never have a name, you know. And here,
it's true, no name.
We're going to. No, that's not going to happen here. And what's crazy is, of course, we know Mord's never going to talk, and yet he is going to have this massive role in this show. There's going to be whole episodes like where Mord is almost a main character, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's instrumental in driving the story, and yet never
with
talks.
No lines.
Exactly. It's just so crazy. So, I mean, I think it's just, again, this is one of those places where Deep Space Nine just allows us here in a very interesting and I think strange way to see the ways in which it's going to be a different type of show.
Mm-hmm. Another way that this episode shows that DS9 is differentiating itself from TNG is the fact that Vulcans show up. Because TNG spent so much of its early life, especially, trying to pretend like there are no Vulcans. Although when the remastered episodes came out, you can actually see Vulcans in the background of engineering in, I believe, an encounter at Farpoint, actually, at the start of the series. But they never get any kind of really big role or any real screen time, any acknowledgement that Vulcans are around anymore because, hey, we got to do our own thing. But here we've got an actual Vulcan ship comes to the rescue, picks them up, and I thought it was great just to see the Vulcans fully on screen like that.
And of course, you know, just watching Enterprise as I am with my wife right now, and of course us doing the series over on Warp 5, I mean, I'm so used to seeing Vulcans around, you know. So the fact that they showed up in one of their ships here, I thought was pretty fascinating. Because is this the first time in, like, 24th century Star Trek that we've actually seen a Vulcan ship?
Like the ship and inside of the ship and so forth?
Like a Vulcan and their ship. Like, they actually still do have ships that aren't just Starfleet ships, you know?
Right.
I think I don't know if it is, but it feels like it's very close to being the first time that's ever.
I mean, if it's not, then it only happened maybe one time before that. I'm trying to think back because I remember when this first aired, it really was jarring to see the Vulcans on the screen like this,
right?
Because
yes,
it wasn't something that we were getting in TNG. And
I totally forgot there was a Vulcan.
Otherwise, you know, I'm thinking like here in Deep Space Nine, of course, we have a Vulcan captain of the Saratoga, right? And the flashbacks to Wolf 359, where Sisko was there as the first officer, I believe, right? J.G. Hertzler.
We did see that, absolutely.
Right. So J.G. Hertzler, before he was Martok, mm-hmm. he played the Vulcan there. But otherwise, you know, I feel like this is the first moment here, a big moment like this. And then on TNG, if I'm thinking back when we did see somebody, it was within a Starfleet context. Of course, we had Solar, you know, Dr. Solar, but again, aboard the Enterprise in a Starfleet context. So, yeah, this does feel to me like it's that revitalization of the Vulcan culture on screen in the Star Trek universe, which really helps to broaden the scope of what the Federation is, bring the founding worlds back in to the fold a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting because as we're talking about this, the one thing I'm thinking of with the series and wishing that they had actually been able to do was to bring in the Andorians. I think it's the mm-hmm. only race, you know, that, and they mention them quite a bit, which I think is mm-hmm. great, but we never actually get to see them. And it's always a little bit disappointing to me that that's the case, because I think mm-hmm. it would have been phenomenal to see what, you know, that race. I just think it would have been a really neat thing to have been able to bring them back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was really excited when Enterprise premiered and I found out the Andorians are coming.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would have there was this like kind of longing, like you say, to see them again. And it would have been great if we had gotten them in here.
Yes. I mean, I think it's, you know, but I think one of the best parts about this episode is that it is interesting to me how much Enterprise and Deep Space Nine kind of have in common. And I think one of the biggest things that they do have in common is the fact that they took the original series seriously, and that it was something that could be referenced and used and work. So, I mean, I'm glad that they did it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, these are the key main points to this episode for me. So what are your final thoughts here, and what's your rating for Vortex?
I really enjoyed this episode, and part of it was because I had forgotten how important it was to the story of Odo. And so it's one of those things where, you know, you get pleasantly surprised when you go back and rewatch an episode. And I think it's one of the better episodes of the series so far, and mainly because it was not afraid to just take a character and run with them. And so I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5 mystery keys, because it's one of those things where I just watched this episode today to get ready and was thinking about it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'd go back and rewatch this episode again, like, just because I was enjoying not only the episode, but I think too, Renee's performance here is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those things that becomes a reason for them to continue to give him more material, because he's so good. And they knew exactly what they had, and goodness, did they utilize it well.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, my thoughts are pretty much the same as yours, is that this episode has so much more in it than you probably remember if you're thinking back to having watched it even multiple times. But as you make your way through season one, because people often talk about season one of DS9 as not being the best, which of course I don't agree with. Still, we see people advising new viewers to just skip season one, get into the good stuff. I'm doing air quotes there. But this episode shows how much important information and seeds and context there is in season one. And this is an episode that actually plays a really important role in setting up the story to come. So highly advise people to go back and watch this one. And I'm going to give it 8 Ferengi phasers available in many a port. So
that's awesome.
Nothing suspicious about my rating at all. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Vortex. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. And the way to find it is to type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. It should come right on up. If not, just type the full name, The Babel Conference. Of course, you can send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. And that will come to Matthew and me by email right through the wormhole. And in social media, you can find us everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not preparing your Mirrodorn cosplay for the next time you watch this episode, where can people find you?
Chris, that's going to take a really long time. If you didn't notice, that neck piece looked very tricky. So I'm working very diligently on that to try and make it as cool as possible. But of course, you can find me all over the place here on the network. 602 Club, we're talking about all of those fandoms we love outside of Star Trek. And then, of course, we're doing, as I mentioned earlier, Warp 5, talking all about Enterprise as we celebrate its 20th anniversary. Of course, you can also find me as well with Literary Treks, books and the comics of Star Trek there. We've got The Artificial Tango, Chris, where we talked all about Star Trek Picard. We'll have more of that coming as well. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, do have a couple shows there. One is called Outposts, talking about Harry Potter, one chapter at a time with Drea Kaufman. And then you can find me with John Mills doing Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars. And then, of course, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. So Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero are the places that I am most active. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out why Rom has brought more glasses than you need, where can people find you?
I just assume it's because he's clumsy and he's going to break one, but I should be more careful and suspicious. When I'm not doing that, you can find me everywhere on social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but I'm also on Mastodon, on the Trekkies.social instance, and elsewhere. So I'd love to chat with you there in social media. Also here on the network, of course, Matthew doing all those shows with you that you mentioned. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time, and you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog. So I hope you'll enjoy the many, many years, 13 years now, of Star Trek discussion that we have here on the network. And if you'd like to help us keep all of that going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. I want to send a huge thank you to everyone supporting us now. We wouldn't be here without you, really. So thank you so much. And if you're not supporting us, I hope you'll consider doing so. Well, Matthew, I hope you're ready for next time, because we're going to be taking a road trip with Kyle Paca.
Chris, I can't wait. So thank you, everyone, for joining us.
We will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.